The following episode of K-Voice was recorded April 3rd, 2017 at 10:45 p.m. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to K-Voice of the Resistance. That's the letter K. Voice. I had a great time in my Deadpool leggings at WonderCon, the Anaheim Comic Book Convention, this past weekend. I hope you too found a way to unplug for a bit. 21 weeks down, and as of recording this podcast, we have 581 days before the midterm elections. Run or volunteer for a campaign. There's no time like the present. Let's turn this horror show into a dream and terrify our conservative counterparts. Okay, we have the votes, guys. The Dems have the votes to filibuster Neil Gorsuch. This is a tough situation, isn't it? In no way does this illegitimate president have the right to seat the most conservative judge since Clarence Thomas in a lifetime-appointed stolen seat on the Supreme Court. Dianne Feinstein made her case for why she will not vote for Gorsuch.
My colleagues, on the other side of the aisle have praised Judge Gorsuch's qualifications. And there's no question he's well-educated and well-credentialed. But we're not just evaluating a resume. If we were, every Supreme Court nominee would pass unanimously, 100-0. Rather, all of us evaluate not only their education and experience, but also their judicial philosophy, temperament, and views on important legal issues. We do this because if confirmed, a nominee's decisions will affect the lives of all Americans for generations. And as I've said, our job is to assess whether the nominee will protect the legal and constitutional rights of all Americans, and whether the nominee recognizes the humanity and justice required when evaluating the cases before him. Unfortunately, based on Judge Gorsuch's record at the Department of Justice, his tenure on the bench, his appearance before the Senate, and his written questions for the record, I cannot support this nomination. Thank you very much.
But this means we will likely lose the filibuster, one of the few tools the Dems have to slow down the landslide, taking America down to the 1950s. But to my mind, there is no other play here. And make no mistake, this is largely our doing. The resistance stood up and refused to allow our representatives chicken out and go soft on this nomination. The hypocrisy and whining coming from the right is breathtaking. Mitch, the turtle who won the race, McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, Obama obstructionist extraordinaire, in 2016 said, "One of my proudest moments was when I told Obama, you will not fill this Supreme Court vacancy." Now, in 2017, he's singing a different tune.
Apparently, there's yet a new standard now, which is to not confirm a Supreme Court nominee at all. I think that's something the American people simply will not tolerate, and we'll be looking forward to receiving a Supreme Court nomination and moving forward on it.
That, sir, is where you are wrong. The American people have chosen to oppose this nomination. We are the American people, we are the majority, and we support leaving this stolen seat open. The Judiciary Committee vote on the nomination of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court will take up the rest of the week. Title X funding. Last Thursday, our Puritan Vice President, Mike never met a vagina he wasn't afraid of, Pence, got to put on his big boy pants and actually do something for a change. And true to character, that thing was to aid in the removal of health care for low-income women. The Senate approved a measure to repeal one of President Obama's executive orders. The order required state and local governments to fund women's health services at low-income clinics, regardless of whether those clinics also provide abortions. Known as Title X funding, the Department of Health and Human Services distributes money to state and local governments to support family planning planning services, pregnancy care, cervical cancer screenings, and other health services for lower-income women and those with no insurance. And need I remind everyone that no federal dollars go to pay for abortion services? I repeat, by law, not one tax dollar goes to pay for abortions. Period. Full stop. But seeing as facts don't matter, Mike doesn't eat alone with a woman unless his wife is there, whom he calls mother. Pence broke the tie in the deadlock Senate, thereby further limiting health care for women. A few things on the House schedule that aren't votes to escalate war are: on Tuesday, the House is voting on H.R. 1343, encouraging Employee Ownership Act of 2017. Essentially, this makes it easier for companies to offer stock options to its employees. As it is right now, at $5 million, disclosure requirements are triggered, and companies have to open the books. This resolution will up that to $10 million. I am all for employees receiving stock options. However, decreasing oversight is not the way to do it. Lack of disclosures make it so companies can trick employees into making bad investments. As one commenter, Henry, said, I think it's a great idea for companies to offer stock incentives. They need to do this transparently, though, and not by offering effectively worthless paper instead of real potential value in the company. On Wednesday, we have H.R. 1219, Supporting America's Innovators Act of 2017. This will allow venture capital funds to be freed from SEC regulations. They argue that this will help those venture capital funds to spend more on helping small businesses and startups and less on complying with regulations. The argument opposed is that the bill allows venture capital funds to escape SEC regulations that ensure investors in the fund and businesses receiving funding are protected from potential abuse by fund managers. Essentially, this act will hurt small businesses rather than helping them. But in my estimation, hurting the little guy is not something our friends on the right have a problem with. The Senate only has two things on their schedule. Last Friday, the Republicans chose to end the Bar Association's semi-official role in vetting judges, which it has done for nearly every administration since Dwight D. Eisenhower, with the sole exception of that of George W. Bush. Which is silly, as the New York Times reports, the Bar Association recently gave its highest rating to champion of the far right, Neil Gorsuch, Supreme Court hopeful. So what's their reasoning? Some studies have concluded that the Bar Association, a private trade group, tends to favor the nominees of Democratic presidents. Is it that they are left-leaning, or that more conservative judges are less, to put it nicely, qualified? I sure don't see any purpose on the Bar Association weighing in on judges. How silly. So, with the reality show that is the Trump circus sucking up the airwaves, Democratic critics are not getting much airtime. Robert Kuttner, co-founder and editor of the American Prospect, had a fascinating idea. He suggested that Democrats start a shadow cabinet. This is something that our friends on the right are accusing us of doing anyways, so we might as well actually do it. If we had a parliamentary system, there would be a leader of the opposition, a whole front bench of opposition spokespeople, issue by issue. The Democrats could get airtime this way, opposing our president and his policies, as well as the policies of the Republicans, and draw attention to many of these acts and resolutions that are being passed daily and never being talked about. More importantly, this shadow cabinet could propose their own alternative solutions and make a case for the Democrats. Once a week, the Democratic front bench could hold its own press briefing, and particular spokespeople could be the ones to whom the media would turn. The press would have to cover this, as much as they cover spicy, ridiculous White House press briefings. As Kuttner says, the contrast would be startling. The bizarre versus the normal. Facts versus fantasy. We live in unusual times, and we need to get creative. Here's the idea. The House Democratic leader, Nancy Pelosi, State Senate leader, Chuck Schumer, and the new Democratic National Committee chair, Tom Perez, should put their heads together and appoint this shadow cabinet. I wouldn't mind seeing Elizabeth Warren headed up, which also will give her an increased presence for her possible future presidential bid. The Democrats have tools at their disposal. While we're losing the filibuster in various ways, we still maintain the power of the purse. While Republicans may be in the majority, they'll need Democratic support to move legislation through the Senate. And in order to avoid a filibuster, GOP lawmakers say they have to make concessions to get the needed bipartisan support for the bills to fund and reform the government. Unless Democrats are willing to force a government shutdown, there will be issues that they will have to relent on. But the threat of a filibuster will will be enough to help Democrats get some of their priorities enacted, in part because of the mere threat of a shutdown. The Constitution. The left can use the courts, and already has. Once, our president has the Supreme Court nominee confirmed. Democrats can try to keep the judicial branch busy by making decisions on controversial issues. Administrative separation of power. Thousands of career professionals who work in the bureaucracy at all levels of government who are insulated from political change by civil service tenure laws. This means that while they are tasked with implementing the laws of all administrations, the bureaucracies they work within won't change drastically when political tides shift, which can have the effect of slowing the pace with which a new administration can implement their agenda. And convolutions of power. State rights. In many ways, our state government affects our lives more than the federal government. Good news for the blue states, not such good news for the red states. States have considerable latitude on how they implement their laws, even for programs like Medicaid that are funded with federal dollars. And the 10th Amendment of the Constitution protects the ability of states to mostly govern themselves. On that note, let's hear it for state rights. CBS Minnesota reports, in direct response to the vote in the House last week to overturn FCC protections to protect the people from internet providers selling our information to the highest bidders, states are putting the matter in their own hands. On Monday, the Montana State Senate approved a budget provision that would bar internet providers like Charter and Comcast from being awarded state contracts if they collect data from their customers without consent. Montana, Minnesota, and Illinois are among the states considering legislation to protect their residents' information, such as their browsing history. Dallas Harris, a policy fellow at Public Knowledge, a group that advocates for open internet, said states are largely free to put stricter regulations than what Congress requires. Harris said, quote, "The internet service providers have put themselves in a bit of a conundrum here. They've bucked the federal rule, and now they're going to get what they hate most, a bunch of state laws," unquote. In other news, our state-run news network, Fox, quote, News, unquote, is under new fire as fresh allegations of sexual harassment have come up. More allegations against Ailes and now Papa Bear. Bill, Maxine Waters has James Brown hair, O'Reilly, has a fresh accuser. And this is not new. Fox, quote, News, unquote, renewed O'Reilly's contract, knowing full well that he had settled multiple sexual harassment cases. Not only that, there is the pattern of not simply harassing women, but pushing them out of their careers within the network. An investigation by the New York Times has found a total of 5 women who have received payouts with either Bill O'Reilly or the company in exchange for agreeing to not pursue litigation or speak out about their accusations against him. Their agreements totaled about $13 million. Besides the women who reached settlements, 2 other women have spoken out of inappropriate behavior by the host. I know it comes as a surprise to no one that the network, who won't allow women to wear long skirts or pants, treats women poorly and values them little. I'm pleased to see some amount of discrediting pushback against our racist, sexist, propaganda-driven, state-run Trump news network and against the entitled foul creature that is the wildly successful Bill O'Reilly. Mercedes-Benz has even pulled their advertisements from his show. It's the little things.
Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable.
That was JFK. According to the United Nations human rights investigators, our right to protest in America is at risk, as bills have risen in 19 states to restrict our rights to this fundamental and constitutionally protected right to free speech. Mina Kai and David Kay, independent UN experts on peaceful assembly and expression, respectively, said in a statement released after the State Department condemned the treatment of protesters in Russia that the state bills were incompatible with international human rights law. Their statement, calling for action to reverse such legislation, said, quote, "The trend also threatens to jeopardize one of the United States' constitutional pillars, free speech. From the Black Lives Matter movement to the environmental and Native American movements in opposition to the South Dakota Access Pipeline and the women's marches, individuals and organizations across American society have mobilized in peaceful protest," unquote. They said it was our fundamental right to do so, but that the bill's Republican-governed states like Indiana, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Michigan, and Missouri sought to stop them exercising that right. Several bills proposed in Colorado, North Dakota, and Oklahoma targeted opponents of the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota and would have a chilling effect on environmental protesters. The UN experts also made the point to say, quote, "One person's decision to resort to violence does not strip other protesters of their rights to freedom of peaceful assembly," unquote.
Newness, newness, listen or we'll vote you out.
Music to my ears. Devin, I'm a member of Trump's transition team, the same team I'm investigating in the House. Nunes had an unhappy homecoming in Fresno, where he was met with angry and musical constituents picketing him and asking for his resignation. He is the head of the House Intelligence Committee, who is tasked with investigating whether our president's transition team colluded with the Russians or not. Did I mention this snake was on the transition team already? Anyway, he has been waging a campaign to discredit the committee and its investigation, and been doing so very successfully. Protesters there say they plan to return every Tuesday. Fresno, Fres, yes. Rock on, Fresno resistance.
We're on a planet that has a problem. We've got to solve it, get involved, and do it now, now, now. We need to build a better future, and we need to start right now. Make it greener, make it cleaner, make it fast, and do it now, now, now.
So, I was listening to a call-in progressive radio show some time back, and a conservative had called in and expressed his view on something. I don't remember what that thing was. I do remember that while he was wrong on the issue, he was not particularly aggressive or offensive about it. What I remember more is the next caller, a fellow lefty who said something like, "I'm calling in response to that idiot who just called in. These conservatives have no compassion and refuse to listen to the other side. Has he ever heard of diplomacy or reason? No, they refuse to even try. He is a moron. And if they could even pretend to have compassion for others and listen to other people, then we would be better off. Their hypocrisy is outstanding." She said something to that effect. The radio host jumped on the bandwagon. I was left with a foul taste in my mouth. This woman was righteously preaching about liberal compassion and insulting the previous caller for not listening to the other side, showing that she neither listened to his points, nor was she showing any compassion, making her the very hypocrite she was accusing him of being. Not to mention that she completely ignored the fact that this guy who supposedly doesn't listen to the other side was listening to the liberal call-in show to begin with. And what bothered me more is I know I have responded in similar times in the past. Fellow lefties, let's have a chat about the tactics we are using to get our points across. Sonia Soto wrote an opinion piece in The Guardian, which served as a much-needed reminder for me. The piece is called "Outrage Makes You Feel Good, But Does Not Get Your Point Across." Her reasoning is sound, and though I take up issue with what seems to be her contention that this is largely a leftist problem, her reasoning stands. And we are the ones who I care hear the message, so here we go. We all know that changing people's minds is a desperate and necessary part of achieving social change. There is a long-standing body of physical evidence that shows that lecturing people that they are wrong, listing a bunch of facts that conclusively demonstrate that they are wrong, regardless of the fact that we are right, and busting the myths spread by irresponsible political opponents, not only fails to change minds, it makes people more fixed in their views. And it sucks, right? Facts and logic should be enough, but of course it's not. Sonia Soto writes, quote, "This particular guilty pleasure brings risk. It can start to feel like meaningful action rather than preaching to the converted, tweet sent, job done, don the feminist t-shirt. Once it spills over from social media bubble into radio phone-ins and breakfast TV, there is a danger that righteous outrage, far from winning people over to our worldview, merely entrenches the ways of thinking that the leftists find anathema," unquote. out. The theory of cognitive dissonance, which is the extreme discomfort of simultaneously holding two thoughts that are in conflict. Festinger, Henry Ricken, and Stanley Schachter, in their 1957 book written about their study on cognitive dissonance, When Prophecy Fails, wrote, quote, "A man with a conviction is a hard man to change. Tell him you disagree and he turns away. Show him facts or figures, and he questions your sources. Appeal to logic, and he fails to see your point. Suppose that he is presented with evidence, unequivocal and undeniable evidence, that his belief is wrong. What will happen? The individual will frequently emerge not only unshaken, but even more convinced of the truth of his beliefs than ever before." Unquote. This doubling down in the face of conflicting evidence is a way of reducing the discomfort of dissonance. And it is a part of a set of behaviors known in the psychology literature as motivated reasoning. Motivated reasoning is how people convince themselves to remain convinced of what they want to believe. They seek out agreeable information and learn it more easily. They avoid, ignore, devalue, forget, and argue against information that contradicts their beliefs. It starts at the borders of our attention, what people even allow to breach their bubbles. Specific Facebook pages, friends, or Breitbart News versus Occupy Democrats, for example. According to psychologist Tom Gilovich, people see evidence that disagrees with them as weaker because ultimately they're asking themselves fundamentally different questions when evaluating that evidence, depending on whether they want to believe what it suggests or not. People come to some information seeking permission to believe, and to other information looking for escape routes. Humans are fundamentally resistant to the facts because evolution has made it so. False facts and stories run through communities like a virus, and no amount of facts can contradict those belief systems because those beliefs feel like facts. And the cognitive dissonance created by the intrusion of foreign facts is uncomfortable and upsetting. And having social support from an evolutionary standpoint is more important than having truth. So things may look bleak, but it's not also dire. As Sonia Soda points out, there is a sizable group of people who are persuadable. The way to do it, though, is to find ways of articulating the case for change that appeals to the values that are important to them on their own ways of thinking about the world, rather than trying to change their worldview altogether. Think about it. This will help to ease the cognitive dissonance by not placing two completely opposing ideas in their heads. Also, by appealing to their values, it will not threaten their social support. She explains that countless campaigns based on facts and myth-busting, built on worthy explanations setting out why people's worldviews are wrong, fail. Anti-poverty campaigns are a good example. Well-meaning strategies often embrace the approach of using statistics and stories to challenge the idea that beneficiaries are scroungers. But research by the Frameworks Institute for the Joseph Rowntree Foundation shows that trying to undo the thinking that those who claim benefits are scroungers is entirely counterproductive. It entrenches these views rather than shifting them. It suggests that campaigners would instead be better off ignoring the scrounger narrative altogether and leading with a different sort of frame. The impact that poverty has on people's freedom to live their lives. Soda writes, quote, "Furthermore, the implicit moral superiority that's often part and parcel of being on the left can get in the way of engaging with people whose views we find uncomfortable. We put arguments that addresses what we find morally objectionable or outrageous about their view front and center, rather than the pragmatic arguments that might be most likely to win the hearts and minds. As uncomfortable and counterintuitive as it might be, taking the time to understand where the other people are coming from can pay rich dividends. Support for gay marriage in the U.S. has increased by a remarkable 20 percentage points in the past decade. This marked shift in social attitudes came about as a result of a campaign articulated not primarily in the language of rights, but in the conservative values of love, commitment, and family, which deployed the right champions, including heterosexual people, to spread the message." Unquote. Remember, we on the left are as susceptible to our own stubborn beliefs as anyone else. So let's not let our own motivated reasoning convince ourselves or help us to remain convinced that the facts and the moral high ground are what will change minds and open hearts. Remember, they believe they have the facts and the moral high ground, and telling them that they are wrong means we have failed already. We can do this. But I think if we start to see results from our own communication improving, it might give us hope and help reaffirm our mission. I think it'll feel really good. Yeah. And a quick PSA about Occupy Democrats. Be careful what you post or believe from Occupy Democrats. They have a way of cherry-picking the facts that can misrepresent the story. And things like Occupy Democrats are a guilty pleasure, ones which I indulge in often. But of late, we must stay educated on it. Occupy Democrats often just gets things wrong. For example, they claimed President Barack Obama has taken less vacation days than any other president in a generation, while Congress has taken more vacation days than any other Congress in history, which, according to PolitiFact, is wrong for the president and pants on fire for Congress. They claimed that Virginia Del Mar Cole wants schools to check children's genitals before using the bathroom, which is false. They also said House Republicans just passed a bill that makes it legal for single mothers to be fired by their employers, which, to quote PolitiFact, is false and has an outrageous grip on facts. So be careful. We have to be meticulous about our sources. As a guilty pleasure, these sites are one thing, but they do little to further our cause. Especially if the goal is to persuade others to our view. Consider it this way. If a conservative Facebook friend of yours posts a Breitbart article, does it hold any water? Or is it worthy of consideration? No, nor should it. We can't fault the other side for turning up their noses at arguments posed by highly partisan sources, accurate or not. That goes, unfortunately, for the Huffington Post. The Huffington Post is quality reporting and an excellent resource. However, it won't carry much weight in a discussion across party lines. Find a source that is neutral or better. Find one that leans right, like The Hill or Bloomberg News, to back up our arguments, and we will be taking a giant step forward in the noble quest to change minds. Okay, before I go, let's celebrate the wins. We defeated the effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act, saving millions of Americans from suffering from premature death. California upholds stricter auto emission standards, despite 45's efforts to lower them. Alex Jones apologized for fueling Pizzagate conspiracy theories. The New York Attorney General took on Trump. Conservative governors opposed 45's damaging budget. The Dems are going to filibuster Gorsuch. The Russia scandal is unraveling quickly. After Trump withdrew federal guidelines protecting transgender students, several state and local officials wasted no time in announcing they would continue protecting transgender students. And Trans Lifeline received so many donations that their website crashed. And this is just to name a few. So let's keep them coming. What we were doing is a big deal, and it is paying off. Okay, well, that's all the time I have. Thank you for listening to K-Voice, a voice of resistance, on the Crab Diving Network, or wherever else you get your podcast. New shows drop Tuesdays and Fridays. If you like my show, tell a friend. Help to spread the resistance word. Find me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice, and on Facebook, K-Voice of Resistance. Get your news 5 days a week from the Crabs on their Crab Diving podcast. That's one word, Crab Diving. Remember to take care of yourself out there. And as always, resist.
We're on a planet that has a problem. We've got to solve it, get involved, and do it.